are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. I'm Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with Ben Golliver from The Washington Post, who is joining me from Toronto. And as much as I'd like to start with the game, because it was a great game, the Warriors beat the Raptors 106-105 to force a Game 6 back in Oakland. But we have to start with Kevin Durant, who suffered an Achilles injury, according to Bob Myers, the Warriors GM, who almost broke down in tears after the game in an impromptu press conference, where he said that no one is to blame, but if you're going to blame anyone, quote, blame me.
Kevin had it's an Achilles injury. I don't know the extent of it. He'll have an MRI tomorrow. Prior to coming back, he went through 4 weeks with our medical team, and it was thorough, and it was experts and multiple MRIs and multiple doctors, and we felt good about the process. He was cleared to play tonight. That was a collaborative decision. I don't believe there's anybody to blame, but I understand this world, and if you have to, you can blame me. I run our basketball operations department.
The fact is, the Warriors won a must-win game to keep their season alive, and yet it seemed like everyone was down and in their feelings because of Durant. And look, understandably so. Ben, you were there. Can you paint a picture of what the mood was like after the game? Was it as surreal as it seemed?
Absolutely. I mean, it worse, honestly. I mean, to me, it was a basketball tragedy. I mean, you're talking about a potential top 10 all-time NBA player in the middle of his prime after spending 10 years trying to chase LeBron James to become the best player in basketball, sacrificing for his team to get back on the court after facing lots of speculation and criticism here over the last few days about what's up with his health and all of that, suffering what appears to be an incredibly serious and maybe career-altering injury. It was horrible on the biggest stage. I mean, you just felt awful for him. You could, like, prior to this, like, one of the weirdest things I've ever seen is that LeBron James cramp game, right, where he goes down and the whole building gets silent. Like, what's happening? It's all weird. You know, he doesn't talk post-game. You know, it just fuels all this conversation about what's going on with him. I mean, this was the cramp game times 10 or times 100. And, you know, to hear that he walked out of the arena with crutches and a boot on, he's got an MRI scheduled for tomorrow. To see Bob Myers as emotional as you mentioned, it was just a very, very dark night. I mean, even the Raptors and Coach Nick Nurse, said, after that injury, I mean, they felt it too, right? Like they were kind of staggering. They didn't really know how to get their bearings. And you actually saw Golden State build their lead a little bit in the immediate aftermath of the injury, because it took that kind of an emotional toll on, within a building that was already just like ready to explode with the hope of Toronto getting its first championship.
And you've got to obviously feel for Durant here. I mean, this is not only a player who came to Golden State to win championships, right? Not singular, but plural. Came to Golden State to win championships and discover, I guess, this higher level of basketball and to really play at this stage more like just every single season. And he goes down in game five of that Houston series in the semifinals, doesn't play at all as the Warriors sweep the Portland through the Western Conference Finals, and then has to basically watch his team from the tunnel go down 3-1 in an NBA Finals against a team that you better believe he thinks that they're better than when he's on the court. And then he gets in this game. He scores 11 points in 12 minutes, all of which came into that first quarter. The Raptors won or tied every quarter of this game, Ben, except for that first quarter when Durant went off. He was literally the difference for the Warriors in this game. Despite going down early in the game, it's probably the reason why the Warriors' season is still alive right now.
There's no question his impact was huge early on. I mean, he hits the 2 3-pointers, gives them a lot of confidence. You start to see some of the behind-the-back passes. You see just like, the emboldened Warriors kind of having their swagger back a little bit after looking so dejected, in the late moments of that Game 4 loss back at home. He has a nice block on Pascal Siakam. Everything's kind of going right for him. But to me, even before he suffered the injury, I don't know if you remember this, he was trying to burst past Pascal Siakam near midcourt. He couldn't do it, and he actually got rewarded with a foul. to me, that was a red flag. It was like, oh boy, you know, if he can't go 0-60, you know, what does this say about his current health status? You know, the very next time he gets the ball, he tries to go by Serge Ibaka, and that's when he goes down to the floor. And, you know, it was sickening to watch. I mean, I was there when he got injured against Houston, too. I mean, again, this one was clearly magnitudes worse. You could just tell by his reaction, by everybody else's reaction. You saw Andre Iguodala and Steph Curry, you know, escort him to the locker room. You know, Steph Curry said afterwards that the spirit just moved him to do it. He just felt like, you know, Durant needed him in that moment. I mean, it was very weighty. Of course, the crowd cheering got a lot of attention on social media. The Warriors were not, you know, super thrilled with that initial reaction from the Raptors fans. But they did praise Toronto's Kyle Lowry and Danny Green and others for sort of quieting the crowd down, you know, making sure that they stopped cheering, and then, you know, turned it into sort of a KD, KD, KD chant as he actually left the court. So, I mean, again, this is the, you know, the emotions of sports all coming together in all these different directions. And, you know, for Toronto, you know, they wind up leaving the game with just, like, you know, gutting heartbreak. I mean, they felt like they had it, you know, after Kawhi Leonard kind of goes nuts in the fourth quarter. And so everybody on both sides kind of rode that roller coaster of emotions.
And, you know, it would be one thing if Durant got hurt and, you know, a team won and then you could move on to game six or whatever, but it came down to the buzzer. There was a huge comeback by the Warriors at the end. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but broader perspective on Durant's Achilles injury. How does this impact the league if it's a ruptured Achilles? And I know, like, he's going to undergo the MRI on Tuesday, but some doctors even say you don't need an MRI to evaluate a ruptured Achilles. I think after Kobe Bryant a few years ago ruptured his, I don't know, I think they knew almost right away. And look, a ruptured Achilles, that will keep a guy out for at least a year. I mean, we just saw DeMarcus Cousins come back, and it took him a year to get back onto the court, and he never even looked quite right after that anyway. That's what I kind of wanted to that's why I wanted to start with Durant, because if he's hurt, as a lot of people fear, it has a lasting impact on the NBA beyond this series.
There's no question about it. So start with his career, right? I mean, he's 30. He's had, you know, 3 foot surgeries. Now he's potentially going to have a surgery here. You know, these are not good signs, right? And he's a great shooter. He's got unbelievable one-on-one skills, great handle, all the length in the world. But these are career-altering injuries. If it's an Achilles, it will change any player, no matter how great. And I think that, you know, Kevin was still in this position with his career prior to this injury where he looked like he was going to be ascendant, potentially the best player in the game here for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, right? Like, this, the way he'd been playing, the groove he was in before the injury and all of that. Now we have to wonder, you know, how much of that assumption should we be challenging, right? Like, is this going to, you know, just enter him into a different phase of his career? Now, more immediately, I think he's still going to be able to command long-term max offers from basically any of the teams that have been sort of vying for his services. So, you know, if he does wind up missing next season, he will do so, you know, being handsomely compensated for it as sort of the destination of his choosing. I think that's, you know, same thing goes with Golden State. I mean, there's no question in my mind that if they have the ability to keep him on whatever contract, they would do so. And same deal with the Clippers and same deal with the Knicks, right? So he's going to have really good financial options. He's going to be able to take his time getting back. But what I was curious of is, you know, kind of imagine guys like Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis. What are those text messages looking like when that happens, right? Because we've seen all these different team-up scenarios, whether it's, you know, KD and Kawhi in New York came out this week, KD in L.A., you know, Kyrie and KD has been floating forever. You know, now all of those guys are sort of intertwined with this horrible kind of, like, twist of fate, and it could potentially change where they wind up this summer. Again, it's just a crazy thing to think about here in the immediate aftermath of such a you know, kind of gruesome and sad scene.
I mean, we were talking about Kevin Durant as leading his own team, possibly taking the Knicks out of whatever it is, whatever hell that they've been living in for the last 2 days. Like, could he lift a team like that to, you know, championship level heights? And look, I'm not saying he can't, but you really need your Achilles to do that. And you know, we've seen bouts of point Durant during the season. You can kind of envision that, like, when he's driving and kicking and just creating offense that way with as mobile as he can be. He needs that mobility to do that. He needs to be able to get past Pascal Siakam to do that in the half court. And look, I mean, what, Kevin Durant 60% of Kevin Durant, 70% of Kevin Durant is still probably a max player. Like you just said, this is a guy we're talking about as the number one player in the league. You know, some certain percentage of that is still a max level player, but he might not be the player that you could just put on a team and have him lead you to the promised land like he's been able to do throughout the last few years.
Well said.
And what we thought he could do.
Well said. And there's a lot of, you know, stakes here. I mean, he was a guy who could potentially have finished, you know, top two or three all time on the scoring list.
Yeah.
He's a guy who could potentially have more rings than LeBron, right? Depending on how things shook out and what his decision was this summer. He's a guy, had he not gotten injured, who would have maybe had three straight finals MVPs. Not very many NBA players have ever done that. It's a short list. It's like Shaq and Mike and maybe one other guy along the way. So these are the kinds of things where the conversation around him, I believe, will change. You know, if this is an Achilles injury, the ceiling that we had envisioned for him, you know, this long-term sort of like limitless ceiling that could kind of extend, you know, deep into the future – it's coming down.
Yeah, and this was easily the number one guy on the free agent market. And depending how, you know, these MRIs go and the reports that come out in the next few days, that might not even be the case anymore. Let's take a quick break here. But first, today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. And thanks to Untuckit for sponsoring Locked On NBA. If you're looking for a great Father's Day gift idea, Untuckit shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to Untuckit.com and use the promo code NBA to get 20% off of your purchase. All right, let's talk about the Raptors here because they had an opportunity to win the game and win the championship. Up six with 3 minutes left in the game, Nick Nurse takes a timeout in the midst of a 10-0 run led by Kawhi Leonard. And then afterwards, the Warriors outscore the Raptors 9-2 in the final 3 minutes. Steph hits a three after curling around a screen, gets a big defensive rebound on the other end. The Warriors swing it around the perimeter, and Klay sinks the game-winning three. Kyle Lowry had a chance to win the championship at the buzzer with a three from the corner, but Draymond Green seemed to have gotten a piece of it. And now we're heading to a Game 6 in Oakland. Ben, what were your thoughts on Nick Nurse's decisions in the final few minutes? First, to stop the game with 3 minutes left, and then later to not call a timeout on that final possession.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of decisions that are definitely going to be questioned. I mean, first of all, the end game was amazing. I mean, I was on deadline kind of writing it, and so you could rewrite any narrative that you wanted to come up with for this series, whether it was like the Raptors coming through, outlasting opponents, Kawhi Leonard stepping up as the hero, finals MVP. You could write that story. You could write the Splash Brothers, you know, pull another rabbit out of the hat story, because that obviously happened. I mean, Golden State, they dodged a bullet too with that over and back call late in that game, giving Toronto that opportunity. So, I mean, there was definitely pressure being felt by everybody and incredible postseason performances being made actually by both teams. I would say it's a little bit unfair to just pin this all on Nick Nurse, because his explanation for taking the timeout was that if he didn't take it, he was going to lose it, which I definitely understand. And Kawhi Leonard, even though he was in the midst of that first real breakthrough stretch for him, for this game, he looked tired and just not all the way in control like he had looked at other times of this series, right? And so I can understand why, hey, you know, maximize his rest, make sure he's fresh for that final stretch. I can totally understand that thinking. Now, on the last play, they have to do better than that because, I mean, you know, that shot in that moment, you can't tell me that that was either what they hoped for or, you know, good enough. And so I think that would be the one that I would question. I mean, I think the way the Raptors explained it, you know, Kawhi passed out because he got doubled and, you know, the ball kind of squirted around and they were just sort of left with that at the end. They needed to have a better plan there. And I think that's one where, you know, Nurse is going to regret that one for sure.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the timeout at 3 minutes. Like, if that's your logic, that's just a thing that coaches do. If that is part of just your theory and your strategy and your approach to the game and how you approach handling timeouts. And like Nurse said after the game, you know, he's got a pulse on his team. He kind of understands. He knows when, you know, he thinks his team could use a break and stuff. I'm not going to question him.
Yeah, like, this was an exhausting game to watch, let alone play, right? And Nurse even said earlier in the game, like, his team was shook by that the injury to Kevin Durant. Like, they felt it, and they staggered back there for a little bit. So I agree with what you're saying about the pulse factor. I think he looked at his guys and said, let's give these guys a moment to collect themselves.
Yeah, so let's throw away the three-minute thing. Like, you know, it's going to be a SportsCenter topic. It's going to be a First Take topic. Not here. But I agree 100% also with you on that final time. Look, it's one thing, yeah, you get the corner three, you get an open look, and all the players kind of, oh, you know, we got it, a look in the corner. Draymond Green closed out really fast. Got to give him credit. Great defensive player making great defensive play, blah, blah, blah. But Kawhi Leonard, you know, he got doubled. He tried to penetrate the defense anyway and get them to crash a little bit. He passes it out to Fred VanVleet and immediately starts looking disorganized. It's not about getting the certain shot from whatever location. If you look that disorganized, and you look disorganized from kind of the beginning of that possession, just call the timeout. Just call the timeout. You look disorganized. Get organized. I agree with you. I think Nurse is going to probably regret that. Depending on what happens in this game six, I don't know. We'll talk. I kind of want to put a pin in that here for a second, but it still sort of feels like this was a blown opportunity for the Raptors, does it not?
There's no question about it. And look, if you want to do the well actually take is their offense was a problem, but their late game defense was maybe even a bigger problem, right? Like, why is Klay so wide open? You know, how is Steph getting some space to hit those threes? I think Kyle Lowry actually said that, you know, one of his big, you know, I guess, you know, things that he highlighted from the box score was that Steph and Klay combined to shoot 27 three-pointers. And that was just a sign of Toronto's perimeter defense not being where it needed to be in such a crucial game, given that those are their main sources of offense and given that they were both shooting the ball really well and especially late, kind of able to key a really, really improbable comeback. So I do think it's a missed opportunity for Toronto, no question about it. They were on the doorstep. When Kawhi scored the 10 straight points, it definitely felt like they were going to win the title. I mean, everything was going that direction. They showed Drake on the Jumbotron, crowds going absolutely nuts. And, you know, you can say the timeouts, you can say the offensive execution, you could say the defensive awareness, all of those things kind of crumbled at the same time. And, you know, that's a recipe for some real regret.
Yeah, and look, I think there you can pull certain things out of this if you're Toronto. I mean, they outscored the Warriors in the paint 54-32. They outscored them on fast break points 13-3. They had the turnover advantage in general. And look, Klay, yeah, he got 13 three-pointers off. Steph got 14 off. But those, like, after Kevin Durant went down, and Durant made he made the first three three-pointers that he attempted, all three that he attempted. But yeah, that's just going to happen. After Durant goes down, who else are they going to go to? It's Curry and it's Thompson. I think they got their offense to do that. I think there's and if you're Toronto, you only go 8 of 32 from three-point range. I thought that was big, where the Warriors basically shot 50% from three-point range. So I thought that kind of had a big swing.
No question. And I think if you're Toronto, like, the story of your postseason has been the bounce backs, right? Like, every time something bad happens, they have an answer. And there are so many reasons for them to feel like they can bounce back and win Game 6. The outside shooting that you mentioned, the fact that Pascal won't have to deal with Kevin Durant's length, which obviously bothered him early. You know, the fact that all of their supporting shooters didn't shoot the ball well. The fact that Kawhi was uncharacteristically sloppy with 5 turnovers and only 6 assists. The fact that he didn't shoot the ball well or get to the free throw line as much as we've seen in some of these other games. And then you look the other way for Golden State. I mean, heroic performance from Durant, obviously, like you mentioned earlier. DeMarcus Cousins gave them some really, really good minutes for the first time since Game 2. Draymond Green hit some really crucial three-pointers that, you know, came at, you know, just when the doctor ordered. And then both Steph and Klay were on fire, you know, kind of like in the zone when it mattered. So there's a lot of things there if you're the Raptors where you feel like those are going to balance out maybe in Game 6 and that your talent advantage and your health advantage will be able to, you know, exert itself in that game.
Before we look into Game 6 a little bit more, Kyle Lowry, you mentioned, like, you're writing on deadline, right? And you've got all these narratives and story ideas. If Kyle Lowry hits that shot from the corner, from that three, Draymond doesn't tip it, maybe it goes in, whatever, hits this game winner at the buzzer from, like, the opposite side of where Kawhi hit the game winner against Philly, to win the championship in Toronto at the buzzer, I mean, that is a major story. I mean, what would that be like?
Yeah, I mean, Ray Allen, you know, times two, right? I mean, how many times do you want the ball to bounce on the rim, though, Wes? You wanted 5 bounces, or for the perfect story, does he have to do more bounces?
It's got to be
Kawhi?
6.
Okay.
6 bounces in the 6.
Yeah. And I can't explain to you how quiet it got when that shot went the way that it did, because it didn't just miss, right? I mean, as you're mentioning, Draymond tipped it, and it just missed so badly. I felt like this crowd was confident the entire night, you know, at times a little bit too confident, you know, based on their reaction to Kevin Durant's injury, but they were so fired up, you know, it felt like Kawhi was pulling them over the finish line. And to have it go that way, you know, with that play design like we're talking about, no timeout, that shot missing that badly, I mean, you could hear a pin drop. And this crowd, you know, at times is one of the loudest I've ever heard in my entire life.
We'll look at game six here in a minute. Let's take a break first. Today's show is brought to you by Grip 6. Looking for a great Father's Day gift? Grip 6 belts are ultra lightweight with no holes and no flap, which equals no bulk. Go to grip6.com/lock for a special offer. And remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On NBA on the free Himalaya podcast app. It's the perfect place to listen to the podcasts that you love and discover new favorites to listen to. Check out their playlist and share and comment on your favorite shows and episodes. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On NBA. So the Warriors and Raptors are going to play a Game 6 in Oakland on Thursday. The Warriors, obviously, will be without Kevin Durant. Kevon Looney also left the game. We haven't talked about him yet. He left the game early after re-aggravating his injury, but he said that he's going to try to play still. The Warriors are banged up again. It's going to be tough for them. If you're the Raptors, I think you can still be pretty confident going into Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Looney because I overlooked that. What a beast. You know, I mean, he looked yes. like he was in serious pain when he went down. And the idea that he wants to come back and play again. I mean, these guys, I mean, the competitive will that we're seeing actually on both sides of this series has just been absolutely incredible. Now, you know, heading into game six for Golden State, like there's no formula besides, you know, like prayer and hope, you know, like just, you know, self-belief. Right. I mean, that's really what it comes down to because they're in the same situation they were, you know, before Durant's return. They're going to have to find ways to fill those minutes. And, man, even though he only played 12 minutes, those were 12 helpful minutes that really kept the burden off of some guys who haven't played very well in this series, whether it's McKinney or Jarebko or whoever else. Like, you know, they don't have great options, as we saw in Games 3 and 4, to fill that time. So,
and they were able to start in that death lineup, right? And that right. really helped them space out the floor to begin the game. And I thought that they got a little bit of a jump there to start. They're not going to have that.
No yeah. question. They help their chemistry offensively for sure. They get out to the quick 8-2 lead. It helped their confidence. And it also put Toronto back on their heels. You know, a guy like Pascal Siakam just kind of looked a little bit off all night. Didn't have his normal, you know, like stat stuffing type performance. I think a lot of that had to do with just, you know, being a little bit intimidated or overwhelmed by Kevin Durant, you know, early in that game. So, you know, no doubt. But for Toronto, they have
One more thing on the Warriors, though. It does, like, I like how you said that. They're kind of exactly where they were going into this game five, but they were coming off of a loss coming into game five, right? And you're coming out of game five now with a win, and all you kept hearing from Golden State was, and rightfully so, just get one. Just get one, we go back to Oakland. We go back to our house. Just get one. And they got one. But they lost Kevin Durant, and just doesn't feel like they have the momentum that they should have, right? It doesn't feel like they have right. any momentum. They seem defeated after the game because of the whole Durant stuff.
Yeah, let me clarify a little bit. I meant that if it's they're in the same spot as they were coming out of game two, because it was kind of the same deal, right? Like, they win game two, but they still don't know when Kevin's coming back. So they come back home, and it's like, well, they're not necessarily in total control of the series. They did get home court advantage, but, like, they still have this, you know, this depth disadvantage against Toronto, and they still haven't really solved Kawhi Leonard fully, right? So a lot of those same problems they were dealing with, like, before, you know, the last three games worth of drama are still there. And I think from Toronto's standpoint, that's your message. Look, you've already beat them in Oakland twice, so you know you can do it again. You know, wrap it up in game six. You know, don't prolong this thing. You know, have Kawhi step up. If he plays better, you know, they're likely going to win. I mean, I think that's sort of been you know, a key hinge piece of this series. Like, if he's the best player on the court, they've been, you know, much better than Golden State, and that just wasn't the case tonight. And, you know, so from that standpoint, I think, you know, the Raptors, it's a mental check almost more than anything, right? Because that was a brutal way to lose a game. It was a, you know, just a devastating night all around. I mean, you could hear the pain in Kyle Lowry's voice talking about Kevin Durant and how you would never wish that on a fellow NBA player. But, you know, they've got a couple of days to pull themselves together. And, you know, to me, they're still favored in this series pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I agree. Look, after that game five, after that last game in Oakland, they were talking about, okay, you know, how do we just not get ahead of ourselves, right? And just sort of the mental fortitude it would take to do that. Well, now it's going to be, you know, it's still going to take some mental fortitude. It's going to be different, though. It's going to be, okay, we lost a heartbreaking game with a lot of emotions happening in that game and a really tough fought game, like you said. And we got to go all the way back to the other side of the country, actually to a different country now, and win a game in Oracle, where now it is obviously going to be the last game in Oracle. There is no other games going to happen here. You know the fans are going to bring it. You know also that the fans are going to be really upset with how they kind of got blasted after they all left early with like 2 or 3 minutes left in the last time that they played there. So they're probably going to show up and be a little bit better than they were in the last game. And that's going to be a tough atmosphere to play in for Toronto. It's
yeah,
going to be tough.
Here's a good place to kind of use as a point of reference. I mean, remember how well LeBron had to play in game 5, 6, and 7
yes.
to pull off that comeback, right? And so Steph and Klay have turned in the game 5 version of that performance, right? But they have to do it again, and they have to do it again. And look, if LeBron hadn't turned in signature performances in those three games, or if Kyrie hadn't stepped up and played as well as he did, you know, that history is completely different, right? So I think that's, you know, one thing to kind of keep in mind here is, you know, the level of, you know, consistent play needed to dig out of this type of a hole, it's out of this world. And so you're saying, okay, can Steph and Klay combine for 12 threes, you know, two more times? If so, Golden State has a chance. Well, that's an awful high bar. And we saw even from Steph in game 4, you know, the signs of fatigue, the signs of overwork on him. His burden has been absolutely monstrous, you know, for the last 2.5 series ever since Kevin Durant went down. And, you know, if Steph turns into B+, they're going to lose. And that's what I mean about the margin of error, right? Like, they almost need both these guys to just have, you know, straight A's. Otherwise, you know, Toronto should take this thing.
It's going to be tough. And like you said, you expect a better game out of Kawhi, probably get a better game out of Danny Green and Pascal Siakam, Marc Gasol. These guys probably start making shots again. If I'm Toronto, I'm feeling pretty confident still, and I still think I agree with you. I think they're favorites in this series to win this series. They got to get one out of the next two.
Yeah, it's an easier math equation when you're ahead. There's no doubt about it. But look, I mean, imagine the pressure if they don't lose games, if they don't win game 6, right? I mean, going back home, this crowd is already on edge after the way this game ended. Having that momentum slip away, having all the questions that we thought were buried about Toronto all be resurfaced, you know, prior to what would be Sunday's Game 7. I would not envy Nick Nurse in that situation, or, you know, Kawhi Leonard or Lowry or any of these guys. And so from that standpoint, you know, I think that's why, you know, their focus should all be on Game 6 and the positive, you know, the positive messaging of, you know, look, we've beaten Golden State at their house before. Our crowd is louder than their crowd. You know, all that kind of stuff is the cards I'd be playing if I was Nick Nurse.
Nick Nurse can grab his guitar and bring it on the plane with him because he's going back to California. Thanks for our sponsors, Hotels.com. Thank you to Untuck It, and thank you to Grip Six Belts. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On NBA on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave us a review. Make sure to check out Ben Gulliver's writing over at the Washington Post. And Ben, I'll see you in Oakland on Thursday.
Sounds great, Wes. Can't wait.